It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting another powerful earthquake has hit central Italy, causing injuries and damage, including the collapse of a 600-year-old cathedral. No fatalities have been reported so far. The 6.6 magnitude quake was near the town of Norcia, where the Basilica of St. Benedict still stands. Thousands were made homeless by the quake.
Ma soprattutto diamo un messaggio alle popolazioni. Noi ricostruiremo.
Prime Minister Matteo Renzi vowed to rebuild houses, churches, and businesses. It was the most powerful earthquake, he says, that's hit Italy since a 6.9 magnitude quake in 1980, when thousands died. Many had already fled Norcia and surrounding areas following an August 24th quake that killed 300. Two strong aftershocks shook the area on Wednesday. Syrian State TV reports that Syrian insurgents have kept up their shelling of government-controlled areas of Aleppo, killing numerous people, including children. A tight siege has been in place since July in rebel-held eastern Aleppo, trapping nearly 275,000 civilians. The dividing lines between government-held and rebel-controlled areas often have been streets lined with deserted buildings or extended plastic sheets to mark rival turfs. Somali government troops have recaptured a village in southern Somalia after Al-Shabaab militants briefly took control of the area. The village is about 250 kilometers northwest of Mogadishu, an area where the militants and government forces have frequently fought. Meantime, people in the rural areas, towns, and villages still under full control of the militants report the mobilization of fighters preparing to recover ground in southern Somalia. This is VOA News. U.S. law enforcement officials say FBI investigators knew weeks ago that emails found in a separate probe may be related to the email case of Democratic Party presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, but did not reveal their discovery until Friday, just 11 days before the presidential election. The Clinton campaign and Democrats were pleased when the FBI in July said that Clinton did not violate the law when she was Secretary of State by using a private computer system for emails. Clinton has vowed to campaign on in the race against her opponent, Republican candidate Donald Trump.
So no matter what they throw at us in these last days, we're not going to back down. We're not going to get distracted. We're not going to get knocked off course. Because we know how much this election matters.
Trump has spoken out often since the latest news broke about the emails, calling Clinton corrupt.
Public corruption is a grave and profound threat to a democracy. Government corruption spreads outward like a cancer and infects the operations of government itself.
Presidential election set for November the 8th, and the voter survey aggregator Real Clear Politics puts Clinton ahead of Trump by just over 4%. European Union and Canada have signed a long-delayed free trade agreement in Brussels aimed at boosting growth and trade and jobs. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau signed the comprehensive and economic trade agreement along with heads of EU institutions. After the signing, European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker spoke to reporters.
Today we've signed two agreements that not only symbolize our commitment to a shared future, but also set a common project that will improve the lives of millions of Canadians and Europeans.
The new trade agreement will remove 99% of customs duties between Canada and the 28-member European bloc, linking the single EU market with Canada, the world's 10th largest economy. Pope Francis goes to Sweden today, commemorating the Protestant Reformation, when Sweden became a grim place for Catholics, many being punished by deportation or death. While in Sweden, the Pope will be joining Lutheran leaders for an ecumenical service, marking the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. And Vietnam has reported its first case of microcephaly likely linked to the mosquito-borne Zika virus. 4-month-old girl born with abnormally small head to a mother who was confirmed to have had the virus.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ivory Coast opposition is claiming victory for what it calls poor turnout in Sunday's constitutional referendum.
The referendum has been organized, but the population didn't go out to vote. The rate is about 3 or 5% of people who went out to participate to that referendum. So it was a failure for Mr. Ouattara.
Jean-Gervais Tchéide is vice president in charge of finance and budget for the Ivorian Popular Front Party of former President Laurent Gbagbo. What's behind the decline in cross-border trade between Burundi and Rwanda? The Kenyan government is accused of eroding civil rights, and the search for a new chairperson of the African Union Commission is progressing.
The candidates who are vying for elections have now submitted the closing date, was 30th September, and now we have some five candidates who are vying for the position.
Irasu Muecha is the deputy chairperson of the African Union Commission, and the FBI reopens its investigation of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server. Those stories, plus Samson Omalu, will have a roundup of Africa sports, and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ivory Coast opposition is claiming victory for what it calls poor turnout in Sunday's constitutional referendum. Voters were deciding to change the controversial clauses in the 1999 constitution, including that both parents of a candidate must be natural-born Ivorians. The opposition had called for boycott of the referendum, saying the new constitution was intended to maintain President Alassane Ouattara in power. The vote itself was marred by violence in several cities. Jean-Gervais Tchéide is vice president in charge of finance and budget for the Ivorian Popular Front Party of former President Laurent Gbagbo. He says turnout was poor because the people heeded the opposition's plea to stay at home.
The referendum had been organized, but the population didn't go out to vote. The rate is about 3 or 5% of people who went out to participate to that referendum. So it was a failure for Mr. Ouattara. A very big failure for Mr. Ouattara, who tried to impose that constitution to the population, and the people didn't go out to vote. They were in phase with our recommendation as the opposition. We asked them not to go out because this text of constitution is not good. And on top of that, the people have not been consulted, which means that normally the procedure for a constitution is that it is the people themselves who begin the procedure to have a new constitution. This is what we did in the year 2000 for the second constitution of our republic. But this time, Mr. Ouattara decided on his own to give a constitution to the country of Cote d'Ivoire, which is not democratic. So we ask the people not to participate, and if they can, to prevent the election to be held.
I want to ask you that because, as you said, you ask your supporters if they can to prevent the referendum from taking place. The allegation is that you instructed your supporters to use violence.
No. What we told them is that we asked them to take their responsibilities because, after all, it is the people who are responsible for a new constitution. So we asked them to tell the population to stay at home, not to go and vote that constitution. That's what we told them to do. Now, in some cities, we heard that there were kind of violence. But this violence is due to the police. When people go out and say the constitution is not good, don't vote during the campaign, not today, and the police comes out and attacks the people who are demonstrating in the street, this is the kind of situation that we are witnessing now. The violent situation may be in 4 or 5 cities, in Abidjan, here in Yopougon, in Bangolo, and in Ganyua.
Mr. Tchéide, you said the turnout was poor. What happens if the constitution is approved or not approved? Or do you foresee that the constitution referendum will be approved?
Normally, if Mr. Ouattara is a statesman, he should be able to listen to his people. Today, we have had an experience where the people have expressed themselves and where they have said to Mr. Ouattara that what you are proposing to us, we don't want it. We are not interested in your proposal. So he should withdraw his project and call the population, all the components of the society, to a national discussion and say, okay, I propose that we change constitution. The first thing it will ask the people, do you want to change your constitution? If they say yes, then we agree on the content. So for us, regarding the rate of participation today, he should withdraw his project because 3 to 5% of participation is a shame. We have never seen that in our country. So if he says that the very poor participation, his decision is approved, okay, we shall meet as an opposition and see what we can do. But for the time being, we consider that it has been a failure. The people have spoken, so he should take it in account.
Jean-Gilvez Tchaïde is the vice president in charge of finance and budget for the Ivorian Popular Front Party of former President Laurent Gbagbo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abidjan. The deputy chair of the African Union Commission says the process to choose the next chairperson of the continental body is progressing according to schedule. African leaders failed this past July to elect a new chairperson to succeed Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, who has led the body for two consecutive terms. Because none of the three top candidates in the July election got a two-third majority, the election was postponed to January 2017. Erastus Muecha, who has served with Dlamini Zuma as deputy chairperson, says five candidates met the September 30th deadline and have submitted their applications.
As you know, that in July the election was not conclusive, and because of that, a new election was to be conducted in 6 months from July, which means the next election will be in January next year. And in terms of the process, the candidates who are vying for elections have now submitted. The closing date was 30th September, and now we have some five candidates who are vying for the position. And so we'll have to wait, and the election will take place end of January next year.
Would you say you have five candidates? Who are the five candidates?
We have a candidate from Senegal. We have a candidate from Chad, a candidate from Equatorial Guinea, a candidate from Kenya, and a candidate from Botswana.
So the candidate from Botswana, we understand also the candidate from Kenya is being supported by the East African community. Does each candidate get support from their own region? How does it break down?
Well, as you know, the commission has got 10 positions. There is a position of chair, deputy chair, and 8 commissioners. And each region has 2 positions. And so it's natural that each region could stand behind a candidate, but that is not mandatory, nor is it procedural that requires that a candidate must. But each region is required, of course, to submit at least 2 candidates for positions of commissioners, and for the chair and the deputy chair, you know, anyone can stand. So the issue of the region really doesn't arise as such, but getting support from the region does help.
If I'm right, you are from Kenya. Do you have a position, knowing that you cannot run again? Do you have a position?
I have served for 2 terms, and I don't qualify to serve for another term. So I am leaving at the end of my mandate.
My question is, do you have a view in terms of the candidates?
What do you mean?
In terms of where you stand?
I don't vote. It is the member states who vote. And so my view will not count. You know, it doesn't matter. It is the heads of state and government who vote for this candidate. They are the ones who can have a view.
You serve for 2 terms as deputy chair. Does it make sense that the African Union has this condition that once you serve for 2 terms as a deputy, you cannot run again? In fact, it seems to me you should be the most qualified candidate if you were allowed to run.
But that's a democracy. That is what our constitution says, and we run by our constitution. Our constitution says if you have served for 2 terms, a commissioner or a deputy chairperson or a chairperson, you can't run for another position.
Thank you. I do appreciate talking with you, sir.
Okay. Thank you so much, James.
Erastus Muecha is the deputy chairperson of the African Union Commission. He was speaking with me from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Today's Monday, October 31st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. cross-border trade between Burundi and Rwanda has significantly declined recently. Traders have called on both governments to sort out their differences to make it easier to import and export goods from both countries. Moses Havriyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
It has been more than 2 months now since Burundi banned the export of food to the neighboring countries, including Rwanda. This has added fuel to an already soured relationship between Burundi and Rwanda. The Burundi government took a further measure to ban all public transport, especially buses, from transporting people to Kigali. The move has negatively impacted the business environment in the country. Nyandwi Celeste is a businessman in Bujumbura.
Matatizo iko kwa juu, hivi kwenda Kampala ni problem. Unatoka hapa unajipakiza.
He says, now, there are a lot of problems because of traveling to Kampala for most small business people is becoming a challenge. Nyandwi says Kampala is where most business people go to buy goods to be sold in Burundi. Now, he said, with the ban on public transport to Kigali, they have to board more than 4 buses to the final destination, which he says is time-consuming and a waste of money. He urged Burundi and Rwanda to sort out their differences so that business people will continue running their businesses smoothly. Relations between Burundi and Rwanda have deteriorated since last year, when Rwanda accused Burundi of supporting the FDLR rebels, who are accused by Kigali for committing the 1994 genocide. In return, Burundi and the international community accused Rwanda of giving military training to Burundian refugees to attack Burundi. Cibitoki is a province that shares border with Rwanda. Farmers here used to export fruits to Kigali, but now the situation is different after 2 traders were shot dead by the Rwandan army while smuggling food. Claude Barengayabo is a farmer in Cibitoki. Barengayabo says when the borders were open, they used to sell to Rwanda and Democratic Republic of Congo, but now they only sell to Bujumbura. He says they don't get any profit, and sometimes fruit go bad without being sold. In addition, Barengayabo says most of the farmers go to the market in Bujumbura, which has created competition, hence decline in the profit. Barengayabo says traders are losing business. Burundi government says the ban on food exportation is just a temporary measure and not politically motivated. Aimable Nkunzimana is the assistant trade minister of Burundi.
Globally, we don't want to export our food because when we analyze our fields in this year, isn't able in order to complete the demand for a population about food. The food which we have in Burundi cannot satisfy our population. And that is a reason which make us to take that temporary decision in order to do not export our foods, but we can import.
More than 4,000 people have fled Kirundo province, located in the northern part of Burundi, due to famine and drought that has hit the area, considered to be the worst in decades. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
A new report says Kenyan authorities are systematically curtailing civil liberties by targeting defenders of civil rights. The authors of the report are concerned about the impact that the trend might have on Kenya's 2017 elections. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
Rights activists have complained for years about alleged extrajudicial killings by Kenyan police. Criticism intensified after the killings this June of human rights lawyer Willie Kimani, his client, and their driver. The new report on civil liberties is the result of a fact-finding mission by an umbrella group, the World Organization Against Torture. Benson Olugbo was a mission delegate and is executive director of the Clean Foundation, an organization that agitates for what it calls accessible justice. Speaking to reporters in Nairobi Friday, Olugbo said Kenya needs police and judiciary reform if the country's civil liberties are to remain intact.
So we are asking for police reform, which is sustained. Because it's not a day's business, it's a process. We're also asking that agencies that are independent should also be allowed to work. And that where there are grievances, people should have that right to go to court, to go to police to report and that the respect of Kenyan citizens, the right actually also, you know, to demonstrate, which is provided in the Constitution, should be protected.
The new report was compiled after the mission met with the representatives of civil society groups, the police, the judiciary, and the European Union delegation in Kenya. Samuel Mohochi, the executive director at the International Commission of Jurists, ICJ, Kenya chapter, said democratic gains made over the years are slowly being eroded by authorities, and advocates for civil liberties are being silenced.
I think the increasing or rising levels of intolerance in society, especially for specific duty bearers or actors, would then create a fertile ground for increased intolerance to criticisms, and that in itself is a clawback to democratic gains. And it starts slowly. Before you realize it, you're in a police state. So these are things that should be flagged at the earliest opportune moment.
The Kenya National Commission on Human Rights, KNCHR, is an autonomous public body charged with redressing human rights violations. Commission Chairperson Kagwiri Mbogori says that in the past year, KNCHR has presented 81 cases of forced disappearances to the Inspector General, the Attorney General's Office, and the Director of Public Prosecutions for action. Mbogori says that proving who is behind the disappearances is becoming extremely hard.
The act of disappearance can be explained in a number of ways. It may be some people have been killed and their bodies have never been found, but it is impossible to really narrow down and point a finger to a particular culprit or culprits. This is very, very saddening, and right now we are dealing with citizens who have encountered this, and it is very harrowing. It is worse than death because you don't know whether your loved one has died or whether they are somewhere suffering or where they went, etc. The uncertainty is terrible.
The World Organization Against Torture says the elections slated for 2017 could prove fatal if the trend of silencing civil society continues unabated. Around 1,100 people were killed in violence after the 2007 elections, with another 600,000 being displaced. Next year's vote is scheduled for August. New members of Kenya's Electoral Commission are set to take office this December. Lenny Rovaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
U.S. law enforcement officials say FBI investigators knew weeks ago that emails found in a separate probe may be related to the Hillary Clinton email case, but did not reveal their discovery until Friday, just 11 days before the presidential election. It is unclear why FBI Director James Comey waited until just before the election to announce the probe, or when he knew about it. But the possibility that the probe could be reopened has got Democrats perplexed. National correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
Clinton's Republican opponent, Donald Trump, seized on the news during a rally in New Hampshire.
The FBI has just sent a letter to Congress informing them that they have discovered new emails pertaining to the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's investigation.
Back in July, FBI Director James Comey concluded that Clinton's use of a private email server was careless, but did not rise to the level of criminal conduct. Clinton addressed the issue in Iowa late Friday.
So the American people deserve to get the full and complete facts immediately. The director himself has said he doesn't know whether the emails referenced in his letter are significant or not.
Polls continue to show Clinton leading Trump, both nationally and in many of the key battleground states that will determine the election outcome on November 8th. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Here's Samson O'Malley with a roundup of Africa Sports.
Good morning, James. We begin with handball. Egyptian giant Halia, the new African club champions, after defeating Tunisia's Esperance de Tunis 26-23 in the final of the African Champions League played on Sunday. Defending champions Zamalek finished third after defeating Wydad Samara of Morocco 30-24 in the third place playoff. Halia will face Zamalek, champions of the African Cup of Cup winners and the African Super Cup. The winner will represent the continent in the Super Globe tournament. In cricket news, Sri Lanka continue to make all the run-ins in the first test against Zimbabwe at the Harare Sports Club. Opu Thoranga notched up his second test century and his 110 not out on Sunday, allowing Sri Lanka to amass 537 all out on the second day in Harare. Having dropped seven catches in the field and seen three dubious umpiring calls go against them, Zimbabwe managed to rouse themselves with the bat and go to stumps on 88-1. To South Africa, where Springbok coach Alistair Kotze is excited about the prospect of seeing several young South Africans in action when the Bucks face the Barbarians at Wembley Stadium in London on Saturday. The Springbok coach has included 12 uncapped players in his travelling squad of 30 for the match, while Barbarians coach Robbie Dean also selected a number of young South Africans in his composite team. In marathon news, South Africa's Stephen Mokoka won the Shanghai Marathon on Sunday in a time of 2 hours, 10 minutes and 18 seconds. It is Stephen Mokoka's Shanghai's third win in 4 years. In the women's event, Africa completed a double with Ethiopian Rosa Dereje Bekele taking the win in 2 hours, 26 minutes and 18 seconds. To Nigeria, where the local organizing committee of the Nigeria 2016 CAF Beach Soccer Cup of Nations has insisted on putting up a world-class event. Speaking to the press in Lagos, the LOC chairman, Seyi Akinwumi, said the committee had been working assiduously for the past 6 months for the competition holding from December 13th to the 18th, 2016. Seyi Akinwumi, who is also the first vice president of the Nigerian Football Federation, said Nigeria is set to improve on the competition after Seychelles successfully hosted the first CAF Beach Soccer Cup of Nations in 2015. And finally, in the Confederations Cup, TP Mazembe of DR Congo appears set to win the African Confederations Cup after holding MO Baja of Algeria to a 1-1 draw in the first leg of the final in Blinda on Saturday. Jonathan Bolingi, one of the four Congolese in the Mazembe starting lineup, converted a late first-half penalty to give the visitors a 1-0 half-time lead, but an exquisite free kick from Fauza Yaya in the second half brought Baja level. The second leg will take place in Lubumbashi on the 6th of November. I'm Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thank you, Samson, for the beautiful report. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Somali government troops recapture Guv Gadu in southern Somalia after al-Shabaab militants briefly took control of the village on Sunday, officials and witnesses said. The militants attacked a government military base. The troops made a strategic retreat and counterattack. Attack the militants. Now, Somali government forces have retaken the full control of the village, said Regional Deputy Police Chief Mohamed Isaac Arias. He said four government soldiers and eight militants were killed during the fighting and 10 other combatants were injured. Guv Gadu lies about 250 kilometers northwest of Mogadishu, the capital, in an area where the militants and government soldiers fought several times in the past. That's it for this Monday, October 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall. I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping that you make this week a very productive one.
Next on Let's Talk, they say most people in the world have no idea how to manage their money. Do you? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing money management. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the electoral process and presidential elections in the United States. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.